This is Content Content, a monthly podcast featuring the people behind the content. I'm Ed Marsh. This is episode number 16, recorded June 13th, 2017. Today's guest is Pavel Kowalik, a technical writer from Krakow, Poland. He is also the co-founder of the SOAP Conference, which includes the exclamation point. You could find out more about the SOAP Conference at soapconf.com. Pavel, how are you today, and what's the weather like in Poland?
Hey Ed, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing good, thanks. And the weather is wonderful. It's short sleeve weather, very sunny, and everything's green, and you know, back to normal, back to the way I like it after a long winter.
Yeah, I can imagine. It wasn't a terrible winter here, but I can't imagine what it's like in Poland. So, Pavel, why don't you start off in telling us a little bit about your background and about your path in technical communication. It's interesting to hear that there isn't technical communication community inside Poland, so we could talk about that. But let's start out with how you got there.
Sure, yeah. So I started, like many people out here, but I started pretty early in the sense that the notion of a technical writer didn't really surface until like 2005, 2006. I started in 2008. Now, of course, there were people who were authoring technical content before that, but they usually didn't refer to themselves as that. I'm talking about people from the traditional manufacturing side of the industry mostly, you know, all those big factories and the military complexes, etc. And they, you know, they were documentation engineers writing for, you know, serious machines and production systems, etc., and of course software companies, which usually had software developers who would write some documentation, you know.
Okay.
Coders who would write the documentation. It's hard. It's hard for, like, a lot of people wouldn't even recognize the term.
That's not too different than here in the U.S., actually.
yeah. But ever since big outsourcing started here in Poland, companies coming here, you know, setting up their documentation departments alongside their development, people started seeing a technical writer in job postings, in job adverts, and that's where I saw it first. You know, I saw something that says technical writer. I Googled it, read the Wikipedia article. I was an aspiring writer back then, so I thought, hey, Thomas Pynchon was a technical writer. Maybe I could be like Thomas Pynchon, you know, just do the same. So, I got into it in 2008, and very clearly I realized that the technical path of, like, supporting other technical writers is right for me. So I started developing some coding skills and started writing macros and started writing some scripts. And pretty soon I got into the work of content management, you know, slash technical consulting, slash content strategy, and, you know, all those things that are necessary to get small teams off the ground. And around that time, we started thinking about organizing the community here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed you were actually part of a Madcap Flare users group. So that's interesting that, first of all, I have listeners in Poland, and thank you all for listening, but that there's a Madcap Flare group, and that there's, it seems like there's a pretty vibrant community in Poland.
Yes, there is. Yeah, actually, yes, there is. Yeah, so back when we started with SOAP, the exclamation mark included, it was, you know, like, there were no technical writing conferences or any kind of groups actively working. There was a small group that worked for about a year. Then they disbanded. People were busy. You know, there wasn't much interest. But then, you know, there was a gap of like a couple of years, and then we started with SOAP. We figured, hey, let's just throw a conference together, which we thought was going to be easy. You know, so so after a
sure
few
it
months,
is. Sure yeah. it is.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out good enough, you know. Like, it was a day full of talks. There was more than 100 people in the first one.
Oh, nice.
It was already pretty popular. And it turns out that there was, in parallel, there was a blog running called Technical Writer or techwriter.pl, which is in Polish. So it's not very much, that's not useful to our audiences outside of Poland that much. But yeah, but it was happening. And we had the conference. the conference came at a time where the interest was sparked. So then, you know, more people started identifying as technical writers, started getting together, and I left SOAP after 3 years of organizing, and then other folks took over. But then I got involved in something called ITCQF, which is a training outfit, which, well, it's less of a training, it's more of a certification kind of thing, and there's a training course for beginner technical writers attached to that.
Okay.
So you can get a certificate, and there are some university programs, some of them organized by companies, like, for example, Motorola in Krakow organizes a course for students to get into it. And some other universities out here. This is a university town, really. There's a lot of schools. A lot of young people. SOAP also generated something called Meet Content. It's a community that organizes meetups. So there's a lot of that happening. I think there's one every month. There's a bunch of webinars on YouTube, some of which I also took part in. And then the Flare user group, which you started with, is very recent, and there's actually a meetup today, the day we're recording this. There's a meetup later on, the first meetup of the Flare user group. So
I'll be right there.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's crazy. It sounds like there's a pretty good community there. I mean, do you know, is there an approximate number of technical writers that you know of, or even, you know, anything related, like a content strategist or information architecture? How big is your community there?
Yeah, so we did a salary survey around techwriter.pl. And we got 200 responses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's, the SOAP conference just happened last week, Thursday and Friday, and it was about 140 people. That attended, yeah. But the 200 is, an unrelated number, I would say. I don't know, how many there are, actually. This is just the respondents. And the majority of them are technical writers.
Okay, so I guess that leads to the question, what's the market like? Is it growing? Is there a demand now? Or is there, like you said, it became a buzzword a few years ago. Is there a glut of people who decided, I want to be a technical writer now?
Yeah, the market is growing, and it's here in Krakow, it's very much an employees market. So there's more recruiters chasing after people to do the work than there's people looking for work. And that goes for technical writing as well. And it's pretty hard to find someone to fill all the positions, just because, when people get involved in an organization, they tend to spend just a little bit longer there, so there's not that much rotation. People get trained, it takes a half a year to get trained, up to a year, and then you start collecting your experience, so you stay there for a few years, right? But then there's more and more demand, right? More and more demand. And so there are some Facebook groups for technical writers, and there's always someone posting job ads there, and then techwriter.pl gets approached by recruiters all the time as well to post details about new job offers.
Wow, that's crazy. So are the opportunities, are they Polish companies? Are they international companies? You run a company now that's for tech writers. So where are your clients coming from? Is it global, or is it specifically in Poland?
It's a mix, and it used to be the majority of them global companies, but now it's more and more Polish companies as they get stronger and bigger and get an influx of people who understand the need for this service. So traditionally, production companies and even software companies wouldn't see the need for a technical writer, but now they do. Now that they've had experience with an international community, a big project, and they themselves deliver huge products. They see, there's a need for a person who is not developing but is thinking about communicating to the user.
So what kind of requirements are there? Are you writing, if you're writing for a global company, you're writing in English, but are you, for your Polish clients, are you writing in Polish and translating, or the reverse?
Well, so usually, usually we write in English. Sometimes it's going to be in Polish, But we usually don't do the translation as technical writers because a translator is cheaper. You know, like
okay.
The hourly rate is cheaper, so they just get someone else
well,
to translate. Yeah, it's easiest to write in English because it's a good pivot language to other languages when you're translating. So it's easier to find somebody who will translate from, say, English to Swedish than from Polish to Swedish. You know, and the rate is going to be lower
okay.
if you're going from English to Swedish. So that's
oh,
the
okay.
reason. Yeah. But Polish people are their English is good enough. To write this technical content. So you don't have to be Shakespeare, right? You just have to communicate clearly, right? And no grammar, etc. And I guess the thing that is also interesting about Polish technical writers is they're so young, you know? Like if you go out to a conference in Europe and everyone's in their 40s or 50s, and here everyone's
right.
in their 20s and 30s.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and they're more keen to learn and use technology, and this is where kind of the new skill set comes in, where a technical writer is often a mix between an author of documentation and a UX designer, somebody
mm-hmm.
who does usability studies. You know, there's more of those kind of things plus technical skills. You know, and like if you go to a team that creates an API, a product with a strong API, and you're the technical author, you may be inclined to like learn a little bit of coding to automate your scripts and you know work in the branches that the developers work in, and you know write some more integrations and some clever things for your website.
That's it. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, well, it's not crazy, but, you know, to your point about the 40s and 50s folks, you know, you can't see it behind my microphone, but my beard is pretty gray. And, you know, when you go to conferences, you do see, you know, a lot of older folks and people who have been in the industry for a long time. You know, I just went to STC Summit in Washington, D.C. last month. And, you know, I did see some younger folks, but it does seem like it's a trending older audience, I guess, in the United States. So it's interesting to hear that it's up and coming because I've always been concerned that, hey, where are the people who are replacing us when we retire in 10, 15, 20 years or X amount of years? So sounds like they're coming from Poland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my company, 3DI Poland, when we went to SOAP, we did a selfie contest. If you take a selfie with the frame
nice.
That we provided. Yeah, if you take a photo... you can win a prize if you get the most likes. And if you look at these selfies, everyone's like 20 something, you know, which
nice.
Is, you know, which is pretty cool. Yeah. And, like I was saying, you know, this mix of skills comes in because the other thing about Krakow and other major Polish cities is there's a lot of startups, and those startups will sometimes get creative about what they do with content. So they want, yeah. So they want somebody who will write the content, but also train the customers, and also, like I said, you know, like develop some clever things, do some UX design or some usability studies, or like, you know, like integrate whatever you're writing with the interface and kind of single source it. You know, like they get all those creative productivity ideas.
Nice. That's exciting because I think. A lot of people are, oh, we have to create a manual and we have to create a PDF or we have to create print and there's nothing exciting about it and people aren't using it. So to hear, you know, that there's people that are doing that is exciting. So I think I'm curious, what's the market like? Is it primarily in Krakow or is it, you know, is it countrywide in Poland? Is there demand for writers across the country?
If I just judge by the community that I see and the job adverts and the a survey we did about salaries, it's mostly Krakow, or Krakow is like more than 50% of the market.
Okay.
But then there's other big cities, which are also pretty vibrant, especially in the western part of Poland, which is the industrial area. But then big cities get saturated. The markets, you know, like they drain all the creative young people that they can, and they start setting up businesses in smaller cities, you know, and other cities. So more and more cities are up and coming in Poland. And I think we're still, the peak is still ahead of us before it starts to peter out. You know, I think there's gonna be more growth. In fact, not specifically technical writing, but the outsourcing business in Krakow has been growing by 20% every year for the last 4 years.
Wow.
And I mean number of jobs, you know. So this year started with 100,000 jobs in the business, in the outsourcing business. That's out of 1 million inhabitants.
Wow.
Yeah. And they are projecting that by the end of the year it's going to be 120,000 people, a 20% growth.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
It's pretty crazy, to be honest.
Yeah, I can imagine. So how does that mean? How have you seen the profession grow in your time there?
Yes, definitely. Like I said, before we started SOAP, there was this other organization that existed. It was, by the way, it was called TCP/IP, which
nice.
Is short for
wow.
short for Technical Communication Professionals in Poland. TCP/IP, right? Yeah. So, so like I said, they operated for a little bit, but then they kind of lost interest, and there was a gap. There wasn't that much interest in, you know, like attending events back then. Weren't so many people who were able to get out of their shell, get out of the office, and come to these meetings. But now there's more. And I when I started my first job as a technical writer in 2008, it was a team of I want to say 12 people. And when I left a few years later, it was 40 people in the Krakow office. Yeah, doing documentation and training, and at the same time, you know, like when I started, there was two other big companies that had small teams and maybe a bunch of single technical writers in some companies, and now there's, you know, like there's a bunch of big teams, you know, those in their 20, 30 people teams. In big organizations, yeah. So, it has grown, and the community of practice has grown. You know, you can find more and more people who are, for example, not just DITA specialists, but they can do style sheets in DITA OT, for example, right? Or you can find people who have successfully become UX designers, and they work as senior UX designers in different companies. They run the usability studies. People who have trained here and moved on to, sometimes even moved out of Poland, you know, but are pursuing the careers in content strategy, etc.
Okay. Interesting. So you're saying that the field is growing. Is there opportunity if someone from the States wanted to come over and find a job in Poland? Is there an easy transfer? Have you seen anything like that happening?
I have seen it, but just a few times, not many. I guess people are not that interested in moving to Poland, you know, from the U.S. If you're moving from Ukraine, for example, it's much more attractive.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, but it should be pretty simple, especially with such high demand, you know, and if you have a lot of experience, you could especially take up the... like senior architect position or like a team leader kind of thing.
Okay. Now, are you seeing fragmentation? Like, you know, it used to be there were technical writers, but then there's UX designers and content strategists and information architects. Since the tech writing field has picked up in Poland, are those other roles or are those other titles being looked at as well? Or is there a market for those specialties?
There is, and part of it is not really strictly connected to technical writing. So some of them,
will be
you know, just like native software kind of software developers need UX designers, and they're going to use those UX designers. But some of it is been driven through let's say a grassroots kind of movement, you know, from the bottom up, from the technical writers. Into the product team and telling them we need this and we need that. And also if a team grows because the volume of content grows, you know, the content that they need to support, you know, so it gets from 10 people to 20 people, but then they discover automation or discover better ways of doing things and they don't need to do so much writing anymore. They tend to specialize, you know, so they come up with a more sophisticated workflow and turn themselves into editors, quality champions, testers, etc. That's another thing that's interesting, which I haven't seen so much, is documentation testing. Yeah, there's thoughts of like doing this more formally and more kind of repeat, like in a repeatable way that can be transferred to other units. Because right now there's just small islands, but it's, you know, I was pretty surprised when I heard it somewhere last year, you know, and I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Documentation testing makes sense, right? So just to maybe expand on what I mean by that is you could do your sanity tests on what you publish. For example, you publish a website and you need to have like regression testing of whether all the links work, whether the content isn't missing where it shouldn't be because of conditioning, etc. So like those, you know, like sanity checks, which make your QA process quicker, whatever your QA process is, checking something after publication, right? But then on the other hand, you can do even more than that. You could put metrics in place which will be fed by the peer review and count how many like errors somebody made, which will integrate looking at terminology and spell checks, which will maybe even run through procedures if that's doable, at least in the sense of, you know, like subsequent steps contain labels of buttons. Do those buttons exist? Can you click them? If not, you know, maybe it's an error. So like people are talking about these kind of things and working in their small fields, trying to figure out scripts or, and whatnot for that. Now, there is at the same time a very good and vibrant tester community in Poland. And if we could find a bridge between those two communities, maybe some testers could share good practices and we could start introducing them into the world of documentation.
Well, that's really interesting. I've never heard of documentation testing before, so that's new. It sounds like, honestly, you know, if you're doing from the bottom up with technical writers and the demand is growing and people are actually listening to technical writers, I have to say it sounds like you've got it pretty good over there in Poland, because we don't get that kind of respect or we don't get that kind of opportunity here in the States. So it sounds like you're kind of doing things right over there.
I mean, thank you very much. It is hard, you know. It is hard for a technical author to get that respect, because like you said, they often, technical authors often think of themselves as inferior. and, you know, and then software developers or product designers kind of enforce that or reinforce that feeling. But if you really put your heart into it as a technical writer and, you know, show your professionalism, and people start to respect you and you start to respect yourself. So that's what I kind of wish more technical writers felt, you know, this kind of being certain of your own skills and being able to persuade others to your points and to your opinions.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I frequently say that technical communicators are the Rodney Dangerfield of the technical world, because we get no respect. But it's interesting to see, hey, you know, you're right. If you do your job well and you earn that respect, then you get more. And I've seen that over my career. Of course, my career seems to have been a little bit longer than yours at this point. But yes, I think it takes time. And I think it takes that, you know, instead of having that head down, I'm just the writer kind of mentality, to head up and you know, realize that you're part of a larger organization. So that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. And then there's, we touched a little bit about, a little bit on the topic of simplifying the workflow and kind of automating things. So I've come across this fear that some people have of automation, especially technical writers in the more traditional organizations. You know, when it, you know, it has been their job every release cycle to spend a week curating those PDFs or, you know, like checking the links or whatever, and then somebody comes up with a macro or a script that automates, you know, checks all the links, renames all the files, moves them or something, you know, and then they feel like, okay, so what am I going to do now? And I've talked to a person not from Poland but working in Europe, running a company that provides those scripts and automation, and he actually had to go out of business because technical writers were not recommending his solutions to their bosses. Oh, you know, and he spoke to some of them and they said they don't want to be out of jobs, you know, which is kind of, you know, this kind of attitude happens in Poland as well. And I'm not saying it's just outside of Poland, you know, but there's a definite tendency, not just in Poland, but everywhere, to accept automation and see how much it makes you, you know, work more on the creative tasks, you know, and more, you know, contribute more of the things that are unique to you as a human. You know, your creativity, yeah, your problem solving skills, etc. Not necessarily going through all the files and renaming them or something.
Right, exactly. And I couldn't do my job without automation. I have a very small team here in the United States. And without automation and without data, I don't think that that we'd be as successful as we have been so far. So, yeah, speaking of data, and I noticed I did a Google image search on you last night to see that you're a very young gentleman, which was nice to see. But I also noticed on one of the images that came up, it says that you called yourself a data geek. So, as a converted Ditta fan, what's your Ditta? You know, tell me a little bit more about your Ditta experience and what kind of tools people are using in Poland. It sounds like Flare is a big one. Interesting to see that Ditta is too.
Yeah. So, when I started as a technical writer, we were writing in an XML standard, which wasn't Ditta, and okay. this was by the way Motorola in Krakow. Right, so mm-hmm. It was a very strong company with a lot of traditions and a lot of good content, and it was all held in this custom XML solution. And then people running the team found that we could gain some more productivity if we use Ditta, because it's a standard and it comes with some tools which help you make your processes more robust. So we started migrating to Ditta, and because I was the script/programmer guy in the documentation team, they asked me to participate. So I took part in all the efforts that led up to full Ditta adoption, which took a good few years to implement. So first there was the setting up the processes and the roles and coming up with a content strategy, and then moving the content into the Ditta format. And then redoing it so that reuse works and everything is semantically sound, etc. That's a lot of work. And you have to set up a QA process along the way, a way to teach authors, and the whole change process, because a lot of people just reject anything that is new and is a drain on productivity at first, And, it's reasonable, right? It's reasonable to detest that. So, yeah, so you have to convince them. So that's another piece of work. So... So throughout all this process, I learned many different aspects of a technical writing setup. Not just the technology, but how to manage the team and how to prove ROIs and how to find process improvements and build processes which are iterable and can be improved and can improve upon themselves. So that that was a lot. And when I call myself a Ditta geek, that's because I spend a lot of time coding the scripts, coding the Ditta OT style sheets, all the Ditta OT stuff, the Ant scripts and the Java classes that go with it. I had to learn to code in Java, and I hate Eclipse. Any Eclipse fans out there, I don't mean to offend. It's just so many sleepless nights trying to figure out why my jars don't build. And then, testing those XSLs in your Notepad, like writing them in your Notepad, running through the publication process, seeing what went wrong, going from a very primitive setup to a more sophisticated one. I worked with some wonderful people who came up with lots of improvements. One of them was a suite for testing our Ditta setup. So when we updated the style sheets, we ran it through a battery of tests that told us what we broke, basically. We could go back and work on that. And it showed us what the differences are in output right now. So the content is the same, but what we changed. And we see if we changed what we wanted or whether we changed more than we wanted to, right? And something else fell apart. And we even built our own online help setup. Online help output. Grab those Ditta HTML files. We updated the transform to make it HTML5, real HTML5, and then the JavaScript around it to have the TOC, the search, and then added some commenting capabilities. So you could have your own standalone online help, which you can comment on and make your own notes and save it for later, share it with other people.
Nice.
There was a lot of innovation in that team. I was real sorry to move on. And coming back to the community, like you said, there's Ditta and then there's Flare. Yeah, so
okay,
it's those two approaches. You're either hardcore XML because there's a huge documentation set and a huge process and a lot of reuse and, you know, many teams you have to coordinate, and maybe there's suppliers who also have data content. So there's this whole philosophy behind that. And on the other hand, there's quick, small projects when you use those HAT or HAT tools, you know, help authoring tools like Madcap Flare or RoboHelp or, you know, whatever else, help and manual, which makes your life easy and you can set up a new project quickly and make updates quickly. But then there's the third thing, the light markup languages and static pages, like, you know, like Markdown and all of those, you know, Sphinx setups. And I think there's three competing ones, you know, and there's always people pointing out the faults in the other ones. But the key notion here is that, you know, these are popular with API docs and where you develop documentation alongside your software developers, so you keep it with the, you know, docs with code. You're right, describing a branch, and then the branch is merged. The docs are merged as well, and you publish the site every night with the latest updates.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm even more glad that you reached out to me about the podcast, because I am shoulder deep in XSL right now, and you know, I'm trying to rewrite the index.html output, you know, to do divs and everything, divs and classes around it, and I am just having a hell of a rough time figuring out selectors. So I might reach out to you and see if I can get pick your brain a little bit to see what it's doing, because I've been trying to do XSL for years and years and years, and I finally got my head around it. But there's those couple of walls, I guess, that, you know, you hit a wall and you're like, now what do I do? And you just go back and you're driving yourself crazy trying to figure out, you know, what's calling what and what's coming from where. And you know, thankfully I'm using Oxygen, which is a pretty good tool, but it's a hell of a learning curve, I think.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I can help you whatever I can do, you know, just let me know. Yeah, because it is a learning process, and I think it's interesting because I've worked in a team where I started doing those XSLs, and then I was given more and more responsibility, and I needed the backup, so I trained somebody up, and then trained another person up, and there was a group of us coming in and out of the team, and eventually a few people have been through it, and it was a real school of hard knocks. Like, literally, you know, like, literally tomorrow we have to publish a PDF, but it doesn't build. What do you do now? You know, so you, like, figure it out and, you know, make it work.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm glad we don't do print or PDF, because I do not want to touch FO. XSL enough. XSLT is enough for me, so interesting. But I do, you know, that goes back to your point about the you know, the languages such as Markdown, where DITA is complex. It's, you know, but it's necessarily complex, I think. But I wonder, and it seems like, you know, especially developers have taken off with Markdown. And I'm wondering if you see, you know, people are requesting more Markdown, or if there's tech writers in Poland who are specializing in Markdown.
Yeah, definitely there are technical writers who specialize in Markdown here. And like I said, they usually work with those API teams mostly, but some other software developers as well. Like, I think there's two approaches popular in Poland for those software docs. It's going to be either wikis or those Markdown and languages like that. You know, people sometimes request it, but with customers, I find it's often that like they've heard about something and they feel like it's the way to go, and then we work together to figure out whether it's really the way to go for them. You know, because they might have heard of Markdown and never heard of DITA, but maybe for them DITA is better. You know what I mean, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. You got to listen to your clients, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nice. So your company is it's called 3DI, but is it Third Eye? Is that how you pronounce it?
No. It's pronounced 3DI. It's, oh, okay. Yeah. It's a UK based company, actually. And the office in Krakow is just a wholly owned subsidiary, if you want to get into the legal terms. Okay. It's just a daughter company. 3DI has been in the business for 14 years, I think.
Okay.
And 3DI in Krakow started last year in January, and we've started building up the team. The 3DI It stands for, there's three D's, so that's design, develop, deliver, and I stands for information.
Oh, interesting. So were you involved? It sounds like, you know, you started a conference. It sounds like you've started this subsidiary company in Poland. It sounds like you have an entrepreneurial spirit. Am I reading you correctly?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, it's fun doing new things, and it's always stressful. It's always a fear. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember my first couple of months of running this company was I would come back home, lay on the couch in a fetal position. My wife would say, "Are you okay?" I'd say, "Yeah, I'm okay. I just need a few minutes." Yeah, just overwhelmed and stressed about this responsibility. Mm. But then it gets better, you know. And then this is something that I would like to get out there to our audience. You know, encourage everyone. You know, get out of your, I know it sounds like a cliche, get out of your comfort zone.
No,
because,
I agree.
You know, yeah, there's cool stuff out there, and you can really change your life for the better.
Yeah, I was at the STC Summit conference. I can't remember who she was speaking, but basically, actually, I got a lot of retweets on it. She said, you know, life begins when you step out of your comfort zone. So it's interesting to hear. And I've certainly stepped out of mine a few times, and it's worked out for the better, I think. Not without its challenges, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, I mean, what you said about accessibilities, you wouldn't get into that if you stayed within your comfort zone, you know?
Right, yeah.
And you know, and it's fun to see people get out and start speaking, you know, and SOAP is a good catalyst for people, for Polish technical authors to start speaking. The audience is very friendly, and mm-hmm. it's always nice to be there. It's very well organized. And I don't see Polish people speaking outside of Poland that much.
Okay.
Which is something I would like to see more. But also, you know, when you're just you have just been writing your whole life and never got out to even go to a conference and listen to people, you know, it's good to challenge yourself, you know, like you said, get out of this comfort zone for a minute.
I agree with you absolutely. And once I started attending conferences, same thing, that sense of community, the networking, and all kind of built up. So since we're talking about challenges, what are some of the challenges that technical writers are currently facing in Poland and I guess in general?
One problem is if you're running a team or looking for colleagues to join your team, there's not that many trained people who are willing to change their jobs. So there's a lot of training going on of junior people, you know, somebody out of university. And that's, I would say the challenge is to have a good recruitment process, you know, a very, like, a repeatable interviewing scheme, unless, you know, if you haven't done this before, you know, to really gauge the skills of the technical author. And then, you know, like, I have a structured test or whatever. And then the training process that you run them through.
Hmm.
So those could be the challenges. And and luckily, we're in a very good place in terms of the growing market. Because that also makes the salaries still grow.
Nice.
Yeah. So compared to... Well, interesting about technical authors in Poland, a lot of them are like myself. I graduated from the English department. My major was in history of the English language, if you can believe that.
Oh, nice. Mine was journalism. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. So it's who you would call non-technical people. You know,
right.
a lot of creative people or, you know, language people, teachers, translators. Hmm. They become the technical authors. Not so many technical people, but now we're seeing more, you know, like people who studied UX or design or things like that, and they get into technical writing.
Hmm. I'm actually in the process of hiring a team member. So what kind of questions do you ask potential technical writers, potential hires, or what kind of questions do companies ask of their potential techcom hires?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so one thing I found cool that I've seen people do during interviews is try to see how they react to being, well, criticized maybe, or like challenged, you know. So like you ask someone, okay, you wrote this word configuration here with a capital C, but then you wrote it with lowercase c. Why aren't you consistent? And then, like, you see how they respond, whether they can, you know, say, okay, I didn't notice that, or they would say there's a reason, and they say why, or they get defensive, right? And it's a that's an interesting gauge of, you know, like who you're dealing with. And then what I like to do is also look at the team that that exists and see what kind of person we need. Do we need an introvert? Do we need an extrovert? Do we need somebody who's more technical? You know, like this kind of like to balance the team, and then kind of ask some questions about motivation, because they can usually tell me what this person is going to be looking for. I use the Pink's theory of motivation. So people are either motivated by being independent and making their own decisions, or they want to be a part of a community, or they want to be the master of something. You know, they want to be the best at something. At any given point in time, you're looking for one of the three, probably, and you can probably somehow narrow it down to one of these three, or it could be a guide for you.
That's really interesting. We've had, I've had introverts and I've had extroverts on the podcast, and it's certainly easy to see the difference in personality, but I've never thought of hiring to, you know, you always hire for what they say cultural fit, but you never think, okay, I've got someone who's extroverted, I need to balance that out with an introvert. I've never heard of that hiring philosophy before. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I found it works, and let me give you another example is where people are enthusiastic and have a lot of ideas. You want to hire somebody who's very skeptical.
Huh, you know? Okay.
Yeah, because in the meeting they're going to say, yeah, but how are you going to pay for it? Or yeah, but where are you going to find the time to do it? And you're like, you know, challenging those ideas versus everybody saying, yeah, let's do it. And they spend, you know, like work nights and kill themselves trying to do something, and they burn out. You know, you don't want that. You know, you want people to strike a balance between their work and their rest and, you know, their personal lives.
Wow, that's cool. That's well, now I have something to think about when I do my interviews this week. Thanks again. You know, you're a great resource, man.
Oh, thank you.
So one thing you talked about back then was back earlier in the conversation was the idea of certification. I'm wondering, because there's been slow adoption here in the States with that. The Society for Technical Communication, STC, has a certified professional technical communicators program. And I think it's growing, but I think it's growing slowly. So I'm wondering if certification is a necessity in your part of the world, or if it's just kind of a nice to have, like I think it is here now.
It's not a necessity. I guess the thinking behind the people, well, because some people set it up and they asked me to participate, be on the board and kind of help them, you know, like with the technical stuff and help them with like evaluating the courses and making sure we're doing a good job content wise when teaching people, right? So that's kind of my role. But the thinking behind it was that you can have people who are completely detached, haven't had any formal training, and they want to, and they are put in a position where they are the sole technical author who has to set up all the tools and the processes, etc. Right?
Hey, that sounds like me.
yeah. So you know the pain. So you have to get some kind of a foothold, like any kind of frame of reference, you know. And it's a great course for those kinds of people.
Interesting.
And also, if you're if you've learned on the job and you want to see what the methodologies are and the practices, like established practices, and you know, compared to what you've been doing for years, that's also a good match for you. You know?
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, it could generate some new ideas for you. And then the idea is that maybe when there's a snowball effect of a lot of people, you know, having those certificates, employers starting to look at whether it's on your CV that you have it, you know, maybe this will help grow the portfolio of the training courses and really grow the knowledge base. You know, be more useful to more people, and then it can grow more.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's about adding all that value, and it sounds like that's what the technical communicator community in Poland is doing. They're, you know, they're not just writers, and I think a lot of people think that they're just a writer, and that's just simply not the case anymore. People aren't paying for that. They don't see the value in just someone who's going to write, and especially if it's at a certain price point when they can get someone, you know, outsourced for a much cheaper rate. So I think you're right. I think that we need to be heads up and not just not just the writer anymore. And I've been trying to advocate that for a long time now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. And even if you call yourself just a writer, you will notice that you don't spend the majority of your time writing, or at least you shouldn't
Right.
be, you know? Yeah. Because you don't want to be producing volumes and volumes of content. You want to be producing good content, which is enough, right?
Yeah, and I see this, and I've mentioned this in my last podcast with Jack Molisani, on social media a lot, especially on Reddit. There's a great technical writing forum on reddit.com. And a lot of people are just, a lot of it is just questions of people saying, oh, well, I'm just graduating college with a English degree, or this technical writing thing sounds interesting. Can I be a writer, or can I transition to writer? And I think they all think that this is just writing procedures and writing steps. And there's so much more that we do that, I think there was a thread or somewhere that, basically, I think I've heard consistently that most technical writers spend about 10% of their time actually writing. Have you seen, is that, yeah, have you seen that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know it's as much as low as 10%. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, you're spending time, you're architecting, you're interviewing people, you're especially if you're in a structured environment, you're figuring out opportunities for you, reuse, you're figuring out, how does the new content fit in with the old content? We do data-driven content where we're making sure that we're getting rid of the low-performing topics, or reviewing to make sure that, hey, maybe there's something here we can use elsewhere. Or you're just that constant, that constant sanity check to make sure that the content you have out there is useful, and if not, let's get rid of it. And I think, there's always, like you said, there's always that impetus to create more and more and more, when we have to say, hold on a second, let's take a step back and make sure that the stuff we have is doing its job.
I couldn't agree more.
Woohoo! Nice. So I think the last thing I wanted to ask you was on your about page on 3DI. It says that you like video games, that you play. You also like video games. I'm a racing gamer, so I like R Factor and Assetto Corsa and Project Cars. What kind of games are you playing?
I like those open world sandbox games,
Okay.
like the yeah. So the kind where like you can explore and go wherever, You see a mountain, you can climb that mountain, and there's a monster there,
Oh,
or
okay.
a gang of hoodlums that you can fight, or zombies or whatever, like this. And it's fun because you go like into the world, and you start like building up your base or whatever, like do a little, develop a little economy and manage your resources. And before you know it, it becomes your job, and then you have to quit because it's too much.
Yeah, I hear you. So, since you play video games, what is it else that you do when you're not writing, or when you're not at work?
I also like writing flash fiction.
I'm not familiar with that. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. So flash fiction is very short stories, and they can be like 200 to 300 words,
Okay.
but yeah, some people go as low as two sentences, and there's like
Huh.
sometimes two sentence story competitions, which are
Oh,
pretty,
wow.
they get pretty creative, and you can feel a lot of emotion from just one of these stories. So yeah, I have a blog full of these stories. I have been writing them for like 3 years now, or
Oh,
four
nice.
years. Yeah, so there's quite a lot.
Well, that's great. So, all right. While we're talking about that, why don't you tell us, Pavel, where everyone can find you online and find your blog and find more about you?
Sure. So, if you want to send me a friend request on Facebook or LinkedIn, that's always welcome. You can follow me on Twitter. Now, you can also get in touch with me through the 3DI Poland website. That's 3di.com.pl.
Okay.
That's my professional stuff. If you're looking for somebody to help you with your XSLs, or you need to find some writers who'll write your content for you, that's where you can find me. And if you want to check out my blog of flash fiction, that's in English. The website is kwlk.pl. That's
Nice.
my last name without the vowels.
Without the vowels. Very cool. Oh, well, thanks, Pavel. And for those of you, who are Polish ignorant like me, it's Pawelkowalik. Pavel Kowalik. I think I got that right. So again, Pavel, that was really great. I really appreciated it when I got this random email saying, "Hey, I'm a technical writer in Poland, and I like your podcast. Can I be a guest?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." So it was great talking to you. It was great getting to know you and learning a bit more about the technical communications world outside the States. It's really interesting.
Thank you, Ed. Really a pleasure. Sorry, I'm getting too emotional now, saying goodbye. Yes, it was a real pleasure speaking to you and actually, you know, having a chance to even put my own thoughts into perspective when talking to you. You know, like seeing it from an outsider's point of view. So, yeah. Hey, I welcome more contact from you on, or our audience. If you guys have suggestions or questions or ideas of what, you know, we could be doing together or, you know, advice for writers in Poland, I'm very much interested in that.
Excellent. Well, I am certainly going to follow you on Twitter as soon as we get offline. For now, thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thanks again, Pavel. It was a great conversation. Really appreciate it. Glad we got to get together so quickly, and we scheduled it pretty quickly and easily, so that was nice for a change. Thank you again. You could find me on Twitter at Ed Marsh. It's real simple to spell. And, of course, at edmarsh.com. You can subscribe to the Content Podcast on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and the Google Play Music Podcast Store. We would love it if you could write a review. Let us know how we're doing. iTunes seems to be the big place, but, you know, please let us know how we're doing, whether it's a tweet or even, even a review on one of the sites, so that way people can know about the work that we're doing. If you're on Android, you can go to edmarsh.com/podcast and subscribe using your favorite podcasting client. I say this every time. I like Beyond Pod, and they don't pay me to say that. I've actually paid them for their app. So it's something I use well, and it works well. So again, Pavel, thanks for a great time. Thanks for telling us about the world outside the States and in Poland.
Yeah, thank you, Ed, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Great. All right, everyone, thanks again. We'll see you next time. Have a great day.